You're listening to 66.6 FM, Radio TOVH, The Flush.
Now is the late fall of our discontent.
Yeah, that sounds about right, man. So let's see, today that Trump announced that he was going to have Linda McMahon in his cabinet.
For Small Business Administration, that hurts my brain on so many different levels. Like, WWE is a internationally traded company. It's been around for legitimately, I think, 100 years. It's been passed along the McMahon family line from his grandfather on down to him. She married into it. There's nothing small business about WWE. Well, she's not in the back making PB&J sandwiches for all the boys and sewing up their trunks.
That is not entirely true. There is plenty small business about the WWE in that they refuse to allow their employees to form a union. They don't give them insurance, and they routinely throw them out like trash when they're no longer useful.
And they're all contract workers. But that's more Walmart than small business.
Oh, that's true. That's true. So, you know, the shape of the country looks pretty good. How about the shape of metal? How does metal look right now?
It's kind of like a fat little amorphous blob that kind of gets all pokey towards the end of the year when everyone releases their album of the year list.
We are in, I would say this, we've hit peak list mania. And there are diminishing returns from lists from this point. You've published your list today. That's the day that we're recording. I am publishing mine tomorrow. By the time that everybody hears the show, our list will have been published and touted across the lands that we have superior patrician tastes, that ours is the most metal of all metal lists possible.
Well, and it will be the week where we get the most views out of the entire year.
Yeah, and you know, yours might catch a little flack. You did put both Killswitch Engage and Baby Metal on your list.
I did, and you know what? I'm at a certain age where I sound like a senior citizen when I say that.
Back in my day!
I'm just at the point where it's just like, whatever. I like what I like. I don't care what strangers on the internet are going to say about my music choice. I fully expect it, but it is how I feel. I mean, I know we are a pretty diverse group of people, and there's all sorts of different bands and genres that we cover, so I think there is a level of acceptance to maybe not those bands in general, but just kind of different music that we enjoy. And I mean, Killswitch Engage has been one of my favorite bands for years, going back to their very first album. And like I said in my list, compared to all the other music that I have that's all depressing and bummer music, Baby Metal makes me happy. It's upbeat. It is fun. The band is talented. And you know what? I'm happy with it. And if it really bothers people, suck a butt.
Yeah, I say it all the time since we started the site, that individual taste is subjective completely, and if you're going to give somebody shit over the kind of music that they like, you are a scum person. However, I don't extend that to, of course, things like, you know, NSBM. Like, you got to go out of your way to be a scumbag with that shit. So, I don't like a lot of the things you like, and that's okay. I think that we're still good people, regardless.
Good enough.
Good enough. I mean, like, not Mother Teresa over here or nothing. I don't... What you said earlier is very true. It's a dirty little secret in the blog game. But these top 10 lists that we publish, we get more clicks, views, shares, comments, everything when we put these stupid lists up. Because people love to argue about lists. They love to put their lists up for comparison. They like to call you a poser for adding something that they don't like. They like to praise you for adding something they do like. And it all seems very shallow. W and I have talked about this an awful lot, that maybe we would just stop doing List Mania altogether. But I really don't think we can. A lot of our writers love doing it. I don't think that you're a particularly enthusiastic list maker, but a lot of them are. And
I struggled so much with this list. Like, compared to some of our other writers, I know, like, for example, our buddy Leif Berikson had, like, something like 20 or 30 albums that, like, he had to narrow it down to. And I, like, struggled just to think of 10 albums that I even moderately enjoyed. And I had to, like, go on Wikipedia and look up metal releases and go through some of our releases and just be like, okay, yeah, I did like this one. Oh, yeah, man, this came out this year. And I was, like, just able to get 10 albums.
Most of the choices that I made for Album of the Year is stuff that we've played on this program, like bands that we played on this program. So anything that I put on mine is not going to come as a giant surprise for, you know, the last count, 250 regular listeners of this show.
So is Design the Skyline number one or number two?
Finished is number one.
What about that band that had the G.G. Allin necromancing song?
That one was actually really sweet. Renegade the Shack. Yeah, they didn't have a full record, but I actually that's a thing. A lot of the music we played on here doesn't come from full LPs. It comes from splits and EPs. So maybe in the next season, I think starting in January, we start season two of this show. It'll be a little bit better. But getting back to lists, I just want to make one quick note about the entire process, in that lists are a lot like genitals, and that most people have them, all people have them, but most people have one particular kind of list, and they feel very strongly about showing it to you all the time. I'm calling for a little bit of modesty in the list season, that, hey, maybe just, like, show your list to that special person. You don't want to just, like, slut it up showing your list to every person in town. You know, you might even get arrested that way or catch a disease. Who knows?
Your list is special. No one can just see your list or touch your list. You have to save that for marriage.
It's like a gift in that it can only be unwrapped once.
A flowering list.
I mean, like, gross gross public school education sex talk aside, it is kind of that way. You put up your list once and that's it. You shouldn't be taunting what might be on the list all year round. Cuz I don't fucking care. I'm sure somebody does, but again, it's a very special person who only cares about you and your dick list, your list.
It's a very exposing process. You kind of just laying yourself out there and just be like, hey guys, this is what I like this year. Is that cool? Is this okay?
Yeah. So, speaking of the year end and things that are garbage and kind of useless, the Grammys have been announced. Have you seen this? Have you heard about this?
I have seen this. I have heard about it because it gets covered everywhere. Every year when the Grammys are announced, it's a big news event. And then there's the inevitable follow-up of, who cares about the Grammys? The Grammys don't matter. Who gives a shit?
I believe The Simpsons covered this best back 20 years ago.
Here's that champagne you ordered, Mr. Simpson.
Oh, thanks. Here.
Wow, an award statue! Oh, it's a Grammy.
Hey, don't throw your garbage down here.
No, the Grammys are useless. They've been a running joke for, probably almost as long as they existed. But then again, there was only a handful of awards that, like, have any merit to them at all. A lot of people care about the Academy Awards. I mean, I don't, but because they've never once nominated a Crank movie. But people care about that. I mean, how else would we know about modern day classics like Crash or The Hurt Locker?
I think it's also, there's an Oscar season for movies. It's such a big deal. like towards the end of the year, Christmas time and all that, it is here are all the good movies. Ignore everything that was put out pre-summer blockbuster in like March and April where movies go to die. And music doesn't really have that.
Well, let's go ahead and look at what the Grammys think are some of the best metal picks of the year.
I have the list in front of me if you'd like me to run through it.
Ooh, la-di-da, please do.
Baroness with Shock Me.
I like, I'm on the record as being a pro-Baroness person.
Me too, and it's a really good song, so I'm more than okay with that. Gojira with Silvera.
Yeah, it figures that they would get big mainstream acknowledgement now that they're totally butt rock.
Speaking of butt rock, Korn with Rotting in Vain.
I have not heard this track, but I heard it's a return to form for Korn, which seems like a bad thing.
I guess for fans of the band, it's good. I remember they did put out a song with Skrillex a few years ago, so I think not doing that is a step in the right direction for them.
Yeah, yeah, sure. I support things that keep Skrillex from getting work.
Less wub wub wubs, more. That was actually quite good.
More gorilla noises in metal.
Megadeth with Dystopia.
I can't think of a more predictable pick.
And Periphery with The Price Is Wrong.
My guess would
be Megadeth.
It has to be Megadeth. That's the most boring selection possible, so yeah, it's going to take it.
If anything, it's good for bands like Baroness and Gojira just to be nominated, and I mean that sincerely. Like, their name is just out there for more people to see, so if it gets them a couple of more album purchases, then I'm happy for them.
Yeah, I mean, that'd be great. It's not going to happen. Nobody's going to buy this music.
No, probably not. But there's also the Best Rock Performance was announced.
Oh.
Alabama Shakes, okay. With Joe. I got nothing.
I don't know them.
David Bowie with Black Star.
I mean, like, you don't even have to read the rest of the list. He's going to win because he's dead. That's the
I
one.
Don't have to, but I really want to. 21 Pilots with Heathens.
I don't know who that is. I see their name a lot, though, and it's generally spoken out of the mouths of people that I don't trust.
Yeah, I think that's the right way to go. I think they're one of those bands where you hear it in the background, but you don't know who it is, you don't like it, you don't care, but you have heard it before. I think
so
they're one
of
those.
The new Imagine Dragons, then.
I think that's a good way to put it. Disturbed with The Sound of Silence on Conan O'Brien.
Oh my Christ.
And this one is the most interesting. Beyonce featuring Jack White with Don't Hurt Yourself.
I'm really not a fan of either artist, to be honest with you. I haven't heard this, though, so I can't give an adequate opinion on it, but I assume that they both wear silly old-timey hats.
Regardless, David Bowie's winning that category, so I don't even think it matters. I know some people are up in arms about Beyonce being listed in rock, but it honestly doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. I'm offended that Jack White's listed as rock, to be honest with you. We can't... He's been treading the same well-trod ground that rock and roll hit like 60 years ago, so maybe if we could try something new, that'd be good.
Yeah, I'm still bitter about the White Stripes, the Strokes, the Vines, all those bands getting... Go ahead.
I will defend the Strokes in that they were at least doing something a little bit more fun than what the other bands were doing, just fucking the corpse of classic rock.
Sure, I didn't necessarily have a problem with them. It was more of all those bands being lumped into the unfair label of, like, the saviors of rock and roll.
Oh. rock is dead, you fools.
Speaking of rock being dead, you want to hear the rock albums?
Oh, please
for
do.
For the Grammys? Weezer.
Oh, Christ. They haven't... Weezer hasn't put out a good album in, three times the time that they've been a band. It's been a garbage show from the beginning.
Speaking of garbage shows, Panic at the Disco.
Holy shit, they're still a band?
Apparently they're still a band and putting out music. Who knew? Then again, we are definitely not their target demographic.
No, no, we are not.
Gojira with Magma.
All right.
Cage the Elephant with Tell Me I'm Pretty.
Okay.
And Blink 182 with California.
I hope Blink 182 wins for no other reason than I feel like I should. Wait. Blink 182, they're not the same band anymore, right? They got rid of the guy that believes in aliens.
Yeah, they now have someone from Alkaline Trio playing with them.
Oh, man, fuck that. Alkaline Trio is so boring. I want the prima donna that believes in aliens back in the band.
I don't know if he's a prima donna. He's definitely living on another planet now, because that is not a joke to him. It's not like, oh, I believe in aliens. He, like, seriously believes that aliens exist.
So get this shit. John Podesta, one of the main advisors to Hillary Clinton, had at least one meeting with that guy from Blink 182. Podesta was apparently, like, somewhat interested in UFOs, and that was one of the things that the team was promising, that they would crack into all of these buried Area 51 files. So that's what we missed out on by not electing Hillary Clinton. I mean, obviously, I don't think that she would have done anything of note other than maybe not be Trump, but she would have gotten to the bottom of the whole alien thing.
If only.
If only. Sorry, Tom DeLonge. It was Tom DeLonge. That's the guy. Or maybe it's the other guy. Fuck
and
it.
Going back to the Grammys, and like we were saying before, is people don't take them seriously. They don't like them. They think they're ridiculous. They don't care who wins. There are metal alternatives that exist. Like Metal Hammer has the Golden God Awards, and I know Revolver does something. And those are actually worse than the Grammys, I think, sometimes.
Metal Hammer, that's an interesting thing to bring up, because I feel like they hit this strange, they have this strange demographic that's either a 55-year-old man who only listens to the music of his youth, or like actual toddlers.
It is a weird mixture of bands. I'm actually looking at who won awards for 2016, and it has bands like Enslaved, Lamb of God, Iron Maiden, Anthrax, Nikki Sixx, and then it delves into like Beartooth, Asking Alexandria, Lizzie Hale from Hailstorm. The Golden God Award was given to Joey Jordison. So how are these any less ridiculous than the Grammys?
Wow, these awards are crazy. Lizzie Hale won the Dimebag Darrell Shredder Award.
In what universe is she a shredder?
I am proud that I've still never heard this band, despite writing about them at least once.
I'm pretty sure you could figure out how they sound without ever actually listening to them.
So, their selection for Best Underground Band was Enslaved. Enslaved has been a band for, what, 25 years now?
Is there maybe a different Enslaved that we don't know about?
Clicking through, it appears that this Enslaved is the extreme Norwegian metal band formed by Ivar Bjornsson, who we interviewed on the site a couple of weeks ago. So, I'm going to say that Dr. K really fucked up by not asking him about what an honor it was to win a Metal Hammer Golden God Award.
I'm sure they just polish that thing every day and just gaze upon it with loving adoration.
Nikki Sixx won the Icon Award, and I can't disagree. He is certainly an icon for failing relentlessly, being a horrible fuck-up piece of shit, and just being successful despite it all.
What, you don't like 6 a.m.?
No. Oh, man. You mentioned it earlier in the broadcast. I did make people listen to Design the Skyline. Do you want to listen to a brief bit of a project that Nikki Sixx did that had a lot of rapping in it?
No, but yes.
All right, let's do this real quick. Yeah, he had a short-lived band called 58 with Piece of Candy, which was about like a cam girl back in these early days of dial-up internet, so...
Starved to death because she wouldn't leave her house, no.
Okay, yeah, so Nikki Sixx had a band with a guy called Dave Darling of the band The Boxing Gandhis. You remember them, right?
Oh, sure. I have all of their whatever.
Yeah. He had his records, Nikki Sixx's Americoma records, because he's a clever wordsmith. And they did this horrible rap rock thing. They had one album called Diet for a New America. It was out in 2000. And he describes the origins of the album. He was having a jam sesh with his boy Dave Darling of the Boxing Gandhis, of course. And he said, one day we were sitting around, we had this hip-hop loop up, and I was playing this glam rock riff. And he goes, wow, that's really fucked up. You hear that sound together? I said, yeah, it's horrible, huh? So we started to roll tape. And I mean, like, the rest is rock and roll history.
How has Mensa not signed these two?
I just... There are so many little trinkets that of rock history that will go by the wayside one day. I want this 58th piece of candy remembered forever. But I digress. We should probably get back to the awards that we were talking about.
I'm looking up Nikki Sixx now, and by the time this airs, he's actually going to have a birthday.
Oh, he's going to be 75 now?
Close, 58, but it is a hard 58.
I skimmed through his book at Half Price Books, because fuck buying that, I don't want it in my house. He did describe having, like, multiple heart attacks, like, at a much younger age, so... We should probably cherish all the Nikki Sixx time that we have. We can't take him for granted.
Did his book come with crayons, or did you have to provide your own?
I stole him from Chili's. but it's not just Metal Hammer. Like, there are so many more pointless awards. Revolver has pointless music awards. Have you seen this? Have you heard about this? I don't believe that they've announced the winners this year yet, but I do have the nominees in front of me.
Oh, please regale us.
So, Album of the Year. It's pretty expected stuff. Like, the bands that you would think would sell the most records this year, you've got Deftones, Megadeth, Meshuggah, Metallica, and Volbeat. And I know that there are lots of Volbeat fans out there, because I keep hearing the name Volbeat, but I don't know who they are, and I don't know what this band sounds like.
You know me.
You're a Volbeat fan.
Yeah, I like them.
All right.
I think they're an acquired taste. I can understand why people don't like them, but for a brief description, they're kind of like a hard rock, rockabilly type band.
Interesting. Hard rockin'. So did you listen to Seal the Deal and Let's Boogie?
I did. It's okay. It didn't make my top 10 list.
All right. Song of the Year. You've got an Amon Amarth song.
Interesting.
You've got a Ghost song. Mm. You've got a Megadeth song. Mm. You got a Metallica song.
Mm.
You got a Testament song.
All right.
You got Megadeth, Metallica, and Testament. What more could you want in 2016?
Revolver, right on the cusp of new music.
The bleeding edge of what the kids are into. And it just kind of becomes this circle jerk of an Ouroboros beneath that. Like, best vocalist, Amon Amarth, Deftones. This is interesting. Killswitch Engage. Mm-hmm. Lacuna Coil.
Yeah, put out an album this year.
Did they?
They did.
And Austin Carlisle of Mice and Men, who I believe I am older than, but he looks about 50.
He does. In his defense, he has a lot of health problems, so I'm sure
I didn't know about that. I'm being a dick, sorry.
I won't tell him, don't worry.
Okay. The Dimebag Darrell Best Guitarist Award. So, this is bullshit, number one. Revolver can't take claim on the Dimebag Darrell Best Guitarist Award, while Metal Hammer is over here offering the Dimebag Darrell Shredder Award. This is bullshit. Dimebag Darrell would be rolling over in his grave and asking for another beer, because he probably wouldn't care about any of this. But I struggle to think of a modern musician whose name has just been pimped out in such a way.
Yeah, I really have to think about that. Anyway. Justin Bieber?
Yeah, wow, that's probably about right. The Biebs and Dime together in eternity.
Two peas in a pod.
The Dimebag Darrell Best Guitarist Award nominations go to Mark Tremonti, who you may recall from fucking Creed. Michael Akefelt and Frederick Eckeson of The No-Path.
Okay.
Dave Mustaine and Kiko Alonso, Kiko Lorario, sorry. I don't think the Bills cornerback suddenly became really, really good at guitar. Oh, wait, no, he's in Miami now. Our one fan of football won't get that joke. James Hetfield and Kirk Hammett. Okay. And then, yep. Of course, his eternal shreddesty, Zach Wilde, everybody.
How does he just not win it every year just because it is a Dimebag Award?
It seems like it should just by default go to him every year. When Zach Wilde dies, do you think that one of the many publications that has a Dimebag Darrell Shredder Award will just name it the Zach Wilde Shredder Award?
I hope they create a new category called the Zach Wilde Pointless 20-Minute Solo Award.
The Zach Wilde Award.
He's the only band I've actually fallen asleep to while seeing them live, Black Label Society.
That is awesome. I've fallen asleep to a couple, mostly due to alcohol. man, this is all... It's really, really pathetic. The best live band nominees are Black Sabbath, a band that is damn near 50 years old, Ghost, Hatebreed, Slipknot, and Rob Zombie. Ghost is the only band that didn't exist 10 years ago. And even then, it's still been a bit.
When I think of big, great live shows, I personally don't think of Ghost.
I don't think of Rob Zombie for anything other than... What did John Travolta look like in Battlefield Earth?
Well, with if Rob Zombie does all the big robots and a whole stage show, I can get why that would be exciting live.
I guess. I don't know.
It's something to look at.
The best new talent. I mean, that makes sense, right?
Yes.
We got your boys and your gills and Baby Metal. We got my dudes, my knuckleheads and nails. We got Tooth Grinder. I know Ron Deuce is a fan of those guys. And then we've got Stitched Up Heart. I don't know what that is.
No idea.
Yeah, and also Avatar.
Ooh.
Yeah, I don't know who that is. Is that a James Cameron joint?
They are not good.
are they bad and not good?
They are bad and not good, and visually not good to look at. At least that category has new bands. So at least Revolver did that right.
Yeah, I don't have any particular beef here. It still seems funny to me to think that Nails is on their third LP is considered a new talent.
Yeah, well, Baby Metal has their second album out and they're a new talent.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I don't know.
We just got to do our own Toilet of Hell Awards, the Golden Flushies.
I think that's a great idea, and I think that we need somebody here to help us out with that. So one sec.
Can we do?
Hey, quick reminder, because we got a couple of takers, and by a couple, I mean one person, that wanted to send us things to open on the air for the next show. If you want to participate in our Christmas gift exchange, get at me, email me at toiletofhell@gmail.com, and we'll make some fun happen. You'll bring some joy to some orphans' hearts. And by orphans, I mean us. We've got back on the program Randall Thor helping us out because we've got a new award ceremony that we're going to celebrate annually here, the Toilet of Hell Flushies. And in our inaugural here, I thought we would discuss some of the categories and nominees that will really celebrate the diversity of talent in metal. And, you know, hopefully, you know, get us some big name recognition worldwide, you know? How does that sound, you guys?
Sounds excellent. I mean, we really need an award ceremony that really sets us apart from the competition because, you know, you have the Grammys, you have, who is it, the Metal Hammer gives out the Golden Gods or whatever.
Yes.
And everybody else has their own award and, you know, we're the Toilet of Hell. The Flushies mm-hmm. this is our trophy. This is what we're going to champion and... I guarantee you in less than 10 years, you know, we'll have our own program, millions of dollars spent every year just to televise this thing, celebrities in attendance, you know, previous presidents. We'll have Donald Trump attending.
Oh, man, he's definitely going to die.
Prestigious.
Sorry, dude.
If he survives and this country survives, you know, we'll have, I'm just saying that's how prestigious our awards program, the Flushies, will be in 10 years.
Yeah.
We have potential of two different future previous presidents.
That's true. I'm going to go ahead and put down a deposit for reserving a night at Grom's Chinese Theater 10 years from now.
So, yeah, good call. Let me know, and I'll throw in some PayPal money for you so you can go ahead and put that up.
So I think that in order to really get the full... ethos of metal, we need to talk, of course, about guitars, because metal is a guitar-driven music. And to really celebrate that, we should probably, you know, honor someone who has given so much to metal and so much to the world of guitar. So I think that we should call this the Dimebag Darrell Shredders category.
That sounds familiar.
No, it's not. Fuck you. Who are some of the artists that we should really be celebrating in by nominating for this prestigious award, the Dimebag Darrell Shredder Award?
I don't feel like insulting any of my favorite bands by nominating them for this, so I'm not going to participate in this round.
That's fair. You obviously don't know anything about shredding. 365, is there anybody in your mind that stands out head and shoulders above the pack?
Kid Rock,
I did see him hold a guitar once. I also saw Aaron Lewis of Staind hold a guitar once.
One of these days he's going to learn how to play it.
Now, if y'all really want a guitar god...
Zach Wilde.
Well, obviously, I mean, who can play pinch harmonics better than anyone but Dimebag? That's Zach Wilde. I remember seeing him play open for Judas Priest one year, and for some reason, Thin Lizzy opened for Zach, which made no sense, but whatever. And Zach went on a guitar solo for 15 minutes, and for 5 minutes, we were basked in the extreme, unending glory of... But every duh is a pinch harmonic. And he played this lick... the same notes, the same lick, the same pinch harmonic for a solid minute straight. A solid 5 minutes straight, completely demonstrating his absolute mastery of the guitar, or mastery of the instrument, unparalleled. If Dimebag was alive today, he would be the only one who could go toe-to-toe with Zach Wilde.
There you have it. I think we got a shoe-in for a winner.
Yes.
What else can we have to set us apart from the pack? I think it needs to be timely, you know. We can't just be celebrating Zach Wilde all the time, although that's all I really want to do.
We can, but we should.
Biggest meltdown of 2016.
Ooh. That's a good one. Well, we had what's his face? Judas Priest. Ripper Owens. We had him coming in on my Facebook status laughing at us calling him racist.
He blocked the Toilet of Hell Twitter.
Yeah, he blocked Joe Thrash and Kill too, quite cruelly, I might add. He definitely got mad about being called racist for saying extremely racist things.
Now, keep in mind, this is on my Facebook profile, not Twitter, where anybody and everyone can see it. Just this dude found my Facebook profile because we had mentioned him. And I think we had tried to get a mutual friend to tag him just to be jerks, I guess. But, I mean, I guess when you're using racial slurs on the internet on Twitter, I guess you're the jerk, too. But
all
right, it is what it is.
We should probably stop infringing on his free speech. If we criticize him, it infringes upon his free speech. So,
okay, Phil Labonte.
Phil Labonte, did he have a meltdown?
He did replace someone who had a meltdown recently, Ivan Moody from Five Finger Death Punch.
Ivan Moody, he has he's derelict in his duties of fronting a butt rock band, and that's not the values that I'm looking for in a lead singer. This is not the first
Nails?
Time. Nails? Nails had a minor meltdown. It was a pretty major meltdown as well.
They broke up and canceled all shows, and now they're already announcing tours and stuff again. I'm still a little confused about that.
If you don't acknowledge it, it didn't happen. I enjoyed seeing them call a music journalist a bitch boy on Twitter because he gave them a poor review. I like that. I like it when bands just like get totally aggro over like dumb shit.
I'm pretty sure Roman from Zealotry actively seeks out every single review of his albums and purposely shares all the bad ones. Like, you could say, give him a glowing review, 10 out of 10, best album I've heard in my entire life. Wouldn't share it, wouldn't care. But you give him like a 2 out of 10, say it's a juvenile attempt at writing when in reality the guitarist is playing random notes, and he'll share that thing 6 times.
He might
Incredible.
Be a masochist of some kind. yeah.
What's the, there was another like crappy rock band that had a singer that had a meltdown that wasn't Butt Punch.
Gonna have to get more specific, man. I only know one rock band, and that's Butt Punch.
365, you might be able to help me out. This happened in the fall. Stone Temple Pilots is what comes to mind, but I'm like 1,000% sure it's not them.
I don't know what's in your head, so I'm not really sure.
I thought you could read minds. Didn't we demonstrate that ability last week?
Yeah, I can read minds. That's why I'm not able to figure this one out.
I think you just insulted me.
Well,
you just proven my point.
Yeah, I've got to edit all this shit out.
Great.
I think we've got to give that one to Ripper Owens. I think Ripper Owens won the Meltdown of the Year award, in my book, in my heart at least.
Congratulations.
We need a toilet. I'm near my toilet. If you want me to flush it for a sound effect.
Nah, that's all right. I don't want to waste water. 365. You had an idea for a category.
How about this one? This band still exists and is putting out new records category.
Oh my God. I love it.
Zayo.
Zayo?
They're still a band.
I thought it was like Zao.
I go by Zao too, but I think he can go both ways.
They go both ways.
It was one of my top 10 albums of the year was them.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't even know they were still thing, and I saw people praising their album, and I was just like, wait, they're a band still?
Well,
I haven't heard that name in so long.
To borrow from earlier in the broadcast, Panic at the Fucking Disco.
Wait, they are?
Yes!
They're nominated for a Grammy.
Oh my word.
Well, so we also got Head PE has got to be in there.
Yeah, as we learned a couple of episodes ago, that's still going strong.
Stuck Mojo.
No.
Yeah.
Are they?
Yeah, they put out an album this year.
No.
Yes.
No.
No.
Yes.
I will. I gotta check that out tonight so I can include it in my top 10 list tomorrow.
I think it's called "Here Come the Infidels."
Oh, great.
Here's one: Kip Winger, and he's winning or nominated for a Grammy, apparently, isn't he?
Really?
Yes.
Did he finally get out of lockup for going after that 17-year-old?
I do know that one of my good friends, the singer from Mind Maze, Sarah, she's a huge Winger fan girl, and she loves Kip. She actually got to sing with him this year, so I kind of already knew he was still a thing. But no, he's apparently done something this year that he's got, like, best rock performance or something. I don't know.
All right.
Here's another one. Drowning Pool.
No.
Yeah, I did look that up because I saw something with their name on it. I thought, no, there's no way. They're on, like, their fifth singer now, I believe.
And my favorite one, when I was looking up what albums were released this year, I saw this and I just could not believe it. It is a cover album in their defense, but the Cherry Poppin' Daddies.
Oh, wow. From the Mask fame.
I've never even heard of that.
You've never heard of it? How old are you, Riddle?
27?
I did not know that.
Do you recall a certain time in the mid-90s when swing dancing was a thing?
Dude, I was like up to my eyeballs in Sega Genesis video games and Nintendo 64 in my childhood. I didn't.
Did you ever see the film The Mask with Cameron Diaz and Jim Carrey?
No. The first like thing media-wise I really paid attention to that wasn't a Disney movie was Dragon Ball Z. So,
this explains so much about your character.
Right?
Wow.
So like you don't know like the Brian Setzer Orchestra or like Squirrel Nut Zippers or any of these ring a bell?
No, I've never heard of any of these things.
This is bizarre to me. This YouTube might have all the Gap ads featuring swing dancing from this era. It was a thing, man. Like, people were learning to swing dance. Like, this was a revival.
I mean, my parents sent me to Junior Cotillion, so I learned how to, like, properly dance and eat and, you know, start on the outside with the silverware and the forks and there's your salad fork and stuff.
You've given me an insight into your world that I never knew in the last, like, 30 seconds. It is all coming together to form a puzzle that makes sense.
I gotta lay down.
I mean, I guess I'm happy I can shine a light on my world for you and just kind of let you see into the house I'm coming from, I guess, you know?
Well, this has really thrown a wrench into the works here. I can't even remember what we were talking about now.
We were talking about the Flushies, the bands that are still a thing
I want to like hold your hand and take you into like all of this stuff that happened that you have no idea about.
You missed so much.
I remember in 5th or 6th grade, just my friend having a breakdown at me because all I wanted to talk about was video games, and he just yelled at me. He's like trying to get me to watch MTV and trying to get me to be a normal child. And I was just like, but that's not Mario. That's not Zelda. That's not Sonic the Hedgehog. Like,
that's not metal.
I wasn't even into metal then. I just wanted to play video games
life. Your character has just changed to that's who you are now.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah.
So we got one more category that I think we need to do.
Yeah.
I think I know which one you're talking about, yeah.
The Cuck of the Year Award.
Ooh, Cuck of the Year Award. I think I've got a nomination, you guys. Papa Phil Anselmo certainly cucked himself something good in 2016. At the beginning of the year, he did throw up a Nazi salute and yell white power at a crowd. And then get really mad that people got mad at him about it.
It was an inside joke. Come on.
Yeah, drinking white wine, of course. White wine, white power, a little Hail Hitler. Like, you know, who's to say?
Dude, that's what I do at every metal show. You know, we talk to the venue ahead of time. We bring in bottles and bottles of white wine and then put our leather jackets on and leather chaps and drink white wine and then say Hitler because that's the cool thing to do now.
We must have missed out on an additional, like, element of the joke. It was actually a very vintage wine. It was bottled in 1488. Mm-hmm. You hardcore white power fans will get that joke. eventually he resolved his issues, I guess, by writing a song and releasing it with Super Joint Ritual. What was it called? It was bitching about SJWs. Yes, with the song Clickbait.
Oh my gosh, I remember that now.
Yeah, I don't get it either, man. Like, I'm as bummed about the state of music journalism in 2016 as anybody, that these bloggers in their parents' basement just put up this nonsense. Like, anybody would care that one of the biggest musicians in metal would throw a Nazi salute to a crowd. I mean, the gall of it all. Just making a story out of nothing.
Seriously, I mean, whatever. Did you know that they changed their name to Superjoint?
I didn't. I assume that that's something related to the guy that's not in it anymore. Whoever the fuck.
Well, I don't know. I just know that I went on the Metal Archives page to find this thing. But yes, it is for legal reasons. So probably because somebody didn't want to be it anymore.
Yeah, so, I mean, is there really competition for Cuck of the Year 2016, or is Phil Anselmo just going to take this one home?
He cucked himself so hard that he ruined the legacy of a band that hasn't been active since the early 2000s.
That is so hard to do.
Well, to be fair, I think the band is the worst band ever anyway.
Yeah, but so, nobody gives a shit.
I don't think he ruined it.
Nobody gives a shit what you think. You got to understand, Pantera is one of the biggest bands in metal. Like, Jose Mangan has a tattoo of it on his taint. And even he's probably got some second thoughts now.
Yeah, you put me on the air. People care what I think. Right? You're the one who's like, hey, do a podcast with me. And I'm like, okay. Nobody cares what I think. Who cares what you think?
How about you gotta form more opinions other than I don't like Pantera?
I do. It's stronger than that. It's I think Pantera is the worst influence on heavy metal of all time. See, it's a difference.
Not terribly inspiring.
Well, maybe rage-inducing, because it certainly works. I've certainly been threatened to be beat up quite a few times in person.
Sounds like you're ready for a Zoot Suit riot.
Yeah. Throw back a bottle of beer.
Wait, you do know the song.
Yeah, I know that one.
You fucking cuck.
that's only because the a cappella group at my college performed at every single concert.
Okay.
I know it pretty well.
Wow. I have nothing else to say. This has been the Toilet of Hell radio show. We'll see you next week.
It's over. There's nothing else to even do anymore.
I am so hyped up right now. You have no idea. I could circle pit the world right now.
That's nice.
So, like a month ago, because we're terrible at keeping track of things on the show, we decided for our video series, we were all going to watch The Invitation and discuss it.
Yeah, we probably could have just skipped over it completely, and well, there probably would have been one person who's like, "Why haven't you done The Invitation yet? You said you would do it."
Yeah, I'm sorry, guys. Sorry, guy. I hate to disappoint our fan. So, I mean, like, we should probably get into this. I think it was, man, it was probably on our Halloween episode that we were like, yeah, we're totally going to do this next week. And then, I don't know.
It's been a month.
I suck, dudes. I'm sorry. But I finally did it. I finally got around to seeing this movie that I really, really wanted to see. Like, I saw the trailer for it at the Draft House before it came out. I was like, yeah, that's going to be dope. I'm going to go. And yeah, I lazily watched it on Netflix like yesterday. So you did watch this, correct?
Yep, I watched it. I had actually never heard of this, so I was going completely blind, which is sometimes good. Sometimes you watch a trailer and you kind of get an idea in your head of what it's going to be about. And if maybe it doesn't fit with your idea, you won't enjoy it as much. Or even some trailers will show you the ending like as a way to get you to watch it, and that kind of ruins things. But I went into this completely blind, just based on your recommendation. Do we want to talk about what the movie's about, or just how we feel about it? It's your call.
We can talk about what the movie's about, but first, just an overall impression. Did you like it? Did you dislike it?
I gave it a 7 out of 10. I think initially, it's the interest in the movie is that there's a long, slow psychological build. And in my old blog, 365 Days of Horror Movies.blogspot.com, I reviewed like The House of the Devil, which have you ever seen that before?
That's the one that was filmed on video, right?
I believe so. And it's the whole point of the movie is the slow build. And then like the last 5-10 minutes is where stuff actually happens. So I was kind of getting a lot of that type of vibe, which I think is in recent years kind of been overdone a lot, but it did provide a lot of tension and a lot of this general feeling of what we're seeing and experiencing, like, is it true? Is it not true? And then things happen in the last 15 minutes, which I think helped bring me out of just a general tense but malaise feeling that I think helped bring the entire movie together. So overall, 7 out of 10.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you brought up House of the Devil, because I kind of forgot about that film, but I got the same vibe in that I didn't really like the movie because I felt my patience was being taxed.
It was. The movie's an hour and 40 minutes long, and nothing really happens until like the last 15 minutes.
Yeah, man. So I don't think the payoff was worth the build. But like my favorite movie is Crank 2, so obviously I might not be the right person to ask about this. My attention is scarce. But I thought there were a couple of interesting things that happened in the movie. First of all, I don't remember the names of any character in this movie, so I'm going to make up names for everybody.
Or you can just go on IMDb.
Yeah, sure, I guess. Our protagonist is Mopey McMoface. He's sad. Will. Okay, Will. Our movie opens with him and his girlfriend, who's smoking hot.
Kira.
Will and Kira. Yeah, those guys. They're driving through the Hollywood Hills, and they hit a coyote. And it's real sad because he seems like a nice coyote. But unfortunately, he's been injured, and Will is forced to get out of the car and finish him off with a tire iron and then drag him to the side of the road. After that, Will and Kira are supposed to go to some house in the hills where they got a very nice embossed invitation to visit for a dinner party. I don't know about you. I don't like leaving the house as it is. If I am going along the way to a dinner party that I don't really want to go to in the first place, and I hit a coyote and have to murder it with my own hands, I'm probably just going to go home.
Yeah, they kind of forced to push them along, and I'm not going out unless there's chicken wings involved anyway.
Yeah, spoiler alert, I saw the spread later on in the movie for this dinner party. I didn't see any chicken wings.
Nope, a lot of wine, no chicken.
Yeah, yeah. So eventually, they make it out to this home, which is ballin'. It is a ballin' mid-sanctuary mansion, and it's revealed that Will used to live there. Since then, it's been updated a bit.
Gates on the windows.
Yeah, there's very nice, actually, 60s-style bars. Like, if you're going to have burglar bars on your doors, like, get those. They're real classy, like. They enter in this amazing, expensive house, and there's a bunch of youngish, well-dressed, good-looking people all drinking wine, and my first assumption was that this is a key party. Everybody's just going to toss the car keys in a bowl and just see what happens, man. And it's... All of these people seem so awkward around each other. Nobody's seen each other for 2 years, and yet they're friendly and apprehensive, and Will is obviously sullen as fuck and doesn't want to be there and is kind of rude to everybody.
It's worth pointing out that his ex-wife lives in the house and has invited him, Eden, and she's there with her new husband, David, who looks a lot like Will.
Yeah, I got really confused from time to time. I even looked at their IMDb pages while I was watching the movie, and they look exactly alike.
Yeah. White guys with long brown hair and beards all look the same to me, man.
Yeah, Eden's new husband is a former coke-addicted record executive because I of course.
Sure.
There's like five kinds of people in this movie in L.A., so sure, yeah. We've got the Asian couple, the gay couple, the professor who doesn't want anything to do with this shit, and Will and, sorry, what was her name?
Kira.
Kira. Will and Kira.
Yeah, and there were also two people there who Will doesn't know that were invited by Eden and her husband, Pruitt and Sadie.
Sadie is introduced pantsless because she is that kind of free-spirited broad. And it's immediately apparent that she is totally untrustworthy. Making out with everyone in the room and basically talking about how she loves everyone and she's connected to the universe. You've probably met this kind of person in your life, and you probably were right to stay far away from them.
Yes.
Pruitt is notable because I remembered his name, because that's a good character name, and also because he's played by the guy that played Drew Carey's brother in the Drew Carey Show. Also the mean prison guard in Face Off. So this is a great character actor. I don't know his name, but he's a great character actor.
John Carroll Lynch.
You're amazing with that IMDb.
Yeah, I'm fast.
Everybody's crowded around drinking expensive wine, and Eden and her new husband ask that everybody watch a video. And they crowd around, and this video is a Steve Jobs looking character talking about letting go of guilt and regret and bad feelings and being one with the universe. And then it shows a woman dying in her bed and everybody being like, oh, it's okay, like she's one with the universe and this was good, this is a good thing. The crowd is a little unhappy that Eden and her husband made them watch a woman dying on video, and they start to ask what's happening, and it's revealed that Eden and her husband are a part of some kind of group that they found in Mexico. And I feel like it's supposed to be some kind of Burning Man cult for rich white people who don't have enough problems, so they want to find some vague quasi-religion. I don't know.
Yeah, it's kind, it's kind of like The Secret, where it's just vague platitudes and self-improvement. I think it's also worth pointing out that throughout the movie, Will has flashbacks to his and Eden's son, who died in some sort of accident. So that's kind of why he's Mopey McMoperson.
Yeah, and Eden herself tried to commit suicide. He has a flashback to her chopping away at her wrists. As the group sits around, they're sharing this Key Party-esque game where people talk about what they want, free of judgment. One lady's like, I want some of your Coke record executive guy. And one person's like, I want to make out with this dude. And then old fucking Pruitt, he stands up. He's like, I want to tell you about my ex-wife. I loved her so much. She was the light of my life. And then one day I got drunk and beat her to death. And you really feel the wind go out of the sails. He reels that he goes to prison for a bit. He got out and he found this cult, and everything's good now, man. It's real good. At this point, our professor lady is like, yo, I'm out. Not about this shit. Peace. And everyone tries to stop her. Pruitt may or may not have kept her from leaving. It's not revealed. Will's trying to watch out the window to keep an eye out for her. And at this point, it's getting weirder. The doors are getting locked. There's no real easy way for escape. Will finds very heavy barbiturates in the house. And he's starting to get real, real paranoid, in addition to just being a mean, mopey asshole. So, at this point, the audience obviously knows what's going to happen. Like, Will has the right instinct. Something fucked up's going to happen. And basically, you're carrying along with this for an hour and 20 minutes. Tension's building. Yeah. But, I mean, come on. We all know that cults equal bad.
It takes a lot of commitment for the audience to get through it. Like I said, it's an hour and 40 minutes, and nothing really happens until like the last 20 minutes. So you will have to sit through a lot. But I will say the movie does do a good job of building tension. I think the music in it is really good. It's a lot of subtle strings and violins, just kind of slowly building tension. Overall, I think if you are interested in psychological horror and tension thriller type stuff, it's for you. If you want a lot of hacking and slashing, maybe wait till the last 15 minutes.
Yeah, there's a little bit of hacking and slashing and murder and such, as we were promised. Mm-hmm. It just takes so damn long to get there.
Yeah, I think there's one interesting line in the movie after everything goes to hell and Will and Kira are hiding, is that Will says they're just human, which I think humanizes a lot of what happens in the movie, and it also kind of gives the audience some hope that they might actually get out of it.
So, at the very end of the movie, there's been mayhem and murder, all in the name of this ridiculous cult. Will and Kira go outside, and they find a red lantern outside of the house. And they hear sirens and helicopters all throughout the hills. And they look around to see the houses everywhere around them all have red lanterns. This is to imply that this death cult had picked that day and organized to basically have all of their friends and family over to kill them so that they could all be in the same place at the same time in the afterlife. And all I can think during this part is that this is meant to convey to the audience that this is endemic. Who knows how it's happening, mm-hmm. and how widespread it is. And I'm immediately not concerned. As a matter of fact, I think the world is probably a better place at the end of this movie when all of these rich assholes have killed themselves. Because, I mean, there's no way that, like, in East L.A. people are hanging red lanterns outside because some dipshit death cult they found when they were, like, summering in Mexico. It's like, no, those guys are, like, going about their day as normal.
I thought it was a nice touch and kind of created a bigger universe for all this bad stuff to be happening. And I would say you would have to assume that a lot of the people killed are not all necessarily rich and well off. So they probably kill lots of maids and gardeners as well.
You know, I don't know. I don't know that because in this film, like, there's the house is impeccable. It's amazing. And the food that they make is sumptuous and Instagram worthy. And there is not a single gardener or cook or butler or maid anywhere shown in the movie.
Well, it is at night.
That's fair. I have to assume that they let the help go because they didn't want to, you know, basically include the poor people in their rich death scheme.
Yeah, well, maybe some people got caught in the crossfire too.
All right, that's possible. But on the whole, the world in LA is a better place the next day.
Sure. Well, it might not just be in LA too. It's probably New York and maybe Portland if we're lucky.
San Francisco, probably.
Yes.
Wherever you know, rich people with too much time on their hands congregate, I'm hoping that death cult struck.
So overall, 1 out of 10, what would you give it?
I'm going to give it a 5. And
so
that's
you didn't love it, but you didn't hate it.
No, and I kind of regret picking this because I had, you know, I had higher hopes for this. I thought it was going to be more along the lines of You're Next. Did you ever see that?
No, I haven't seen that yet.
Oh my god, that's a good one, buddy.
There is no replay value for this movie, though. I would say I think once you've seen it, that's it.
That is a true fact. Nobody's buying this DVD.
Nope.
You're welcome to pick the next installment of our video series. Is there anything that you have in mind that you think that we ought to go after?
Yes, after careful consideration and racking my brain to think of something somewhat meta-related, how about I recommend everyone watch Knights of Badassdom? It's currently on Netflix Instant.
Knights of Badassdom.
Yes.
Can you give us a little preview of what to expect?
So it's a horror comedy action movie involving LARPing. And it stars Peter Dinklage is in it. Steve Zahn is in it.
I love Steve Zahn.
Danny Putty from Community is in it. And I know you're a big Always Sunny fan. Someone from Always Sunny is in it as well, and I'll just leave it at that.
Perfect. I hope it's Rickety Cricket.
It is not, but you'll like it. You'll recognize him instantly.
All right. Well, that's your assignment, guys. Next week, probably, we're going to be discussing Knights of Badassdom, unless something comes up. But that's the plan, man. It's on Netflix Instant. You've got it, or at least you've stolen your roommate's password. Watch the shit. We're going to talk about it next time. This has been the Toilet of Hell Radio Show. Thanks for joining us today. We'll see you next week.
You're listening to 66.6 FM. Radio TOVH. The Flush.